just wanted to give you a quick PSA before getting into this week's episode. This week's episode, we had some recording difficulties. The audio is not great on the tasting experience. We were outside. It was a little windy at times. We were in Edna Valley, so we had a couple planes fly over. And we were seated at a larger table. And with all of the elements of that, it's a little hard to hear our tasting attendant who guided us through our tasting. So we still wanted to put out this episode because we think that if you're able to listen to this maybe on, you know, earbuds or you're in a quiet place, that it's a really great story behind the wines, and we had a really great experience there. So we still wanted to put out the episode, but just beware, if you're in your car, you're in a loud area, it might be really hard to hear. You might not get a lot out of it. So if that just doesn't sound like your cup of tea, feel free to skip this week's episode and revisit us later on. But just wanted to give you a quick heads up. We have taken steps to improve the audio experience for future episodes. Hopefully you can tell this recording is much better. So hopefully going forward, all of the audio will be clear and intelligible. But just a heads up on this one. Bear with us. We're learning. We're getting better every time, or at least we think we are. We hope you think so too. And now I will let you get to it. Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Central Coast Uncorked.
This week, we are taking you somewhere completely unknown to us, right? Or did you know about that?
No, I had no idea.
No, I had no clue. Shanae sent me a screenshot of, I think, their website, and they had a bunch of 2012 vintages listed. And 2012 has like a special place in my heart. I feel like in this area, that was overall just a great year. So I have like a hidden stash of 2012s I've been collecting.
Shout out to episode 2.
Yeah.
Episode 3?
I don't know.
Episode 3, actually. Yeah. Episode 3.
Probably both. But anyways, that kind of, we were like, yeah, let's go there. And I'm so glad we did.
Yeah. We went to Piedra Creek.
Okay.
We went there, had no idea what to expect. Neither of us had heard of it. I am willing to bet most of you haven't heard of it.
Yeah. So you guys, like, we're driving there and you go up to this gate. So I'm thinking like, okay, that's not horribly uncommon for tasting rooms that are by appointment only to have a gate. But we go in and it's like a residential area. Like it's houses. There's no tasting rooms. So we find the address and like it's a house. We were a little blown away by that.
Yeah, it's someone's residence. Like it's not just a house they converted into a tasting room. But we waited a couple minutes because we were a little early and felt like it was awkward to go up early. And then we went and knocked at the door and we were greeted by the owner. And I guess she's not the winemaker, but
I think she's like a partner. It sounded like her and her grandson, like, he's the winemaker, she's the business, and I think her specific words were, I do the books.
Yes.
So she's definitely involved, and her husband started it, and it's just, like, the sweetest, sweetest story. Like, the wine is fantastic, but the story is really just super special.
Yeah, and so we had a really special visit with her, and got to hear all about the wine, and hear all about their story. Which, you know, as Jamie said, is special. I think that it's nice to, you know, get to hear personally from someone who is invested, you know, their blood, sweat, and tears, if you will, into something and, like, made it real.
Like, I think the impression I got was that, like, it's definitely a labor of love that ended up being profitable.
Right.
Like, it wasn't...
They were just trying to make wine for themselves and their friends.
Yeah, such a... ended up being a successful, profitable winery.
Yeah. So we really enjoyed it, and we hope that you will enjoy the experience too. I think we captured a lot of the great stories behind the wines and their story in general.
Yeah, so great. Like, you guys are just gonna love it because this lady is just, like, so down to earth and sweet and, like, clearly very proud of her family and this table they've created. So I hope you guys enjoy it as much as we did.
Yeah, and we will catch up with you afterwards with our final thoughts and impressions. We'll see you then.
Bye.
People do you usually get tasting out here per week?
Per week? Excuse me, I average about two. Not too many because we're off the beaten path.
Right. And it's appointment only.
It's appointment only. We, as I say, everything is word of mouth, so we do what we can to make the word of mouth less tiresome.
So is everything grown, well, obviously not the Ducey, but
no.
Do you grow, are these your grapes that you use?
These are our grapes. This is the Pinot Noir in the back. Half acre is the Lagrine, the newer Lagrine, or the, I should say, not the newer, the older Lagrine. Because in the front, we have Lagrine and Pinot Noir in the front of the house, but it's not produced yet because in 2013, we had to pull it out, pull it all out, because of a serious blight. And they didn't know what it was, so the only way to get rid of it at that stage of the game was to get rid of it, pull it out, let the ground go fallow for a couple of years, and then, hope this doesn't start, and then actually replant. And probably next year we may have a small crop.
Cool.
That takes that long.
Yeah.
And of course it's planted on, hopefully, virus resistant rootstock, etc. But this is our Pinot Noir from these two areas here.
That's so cool. We get to like look right at it.
It's too bad. It's too early in the year because it's really pretty.
Oh, I'm sure.
We have a distributor that distributes throughout the California area, mostly here on the Central Coast and up north, but he's starting to go down into the southern part of the state.
Cool. Okay.
We're very small, so we don't. It's very difficult to get a distributor that goes all over the country. We really don't know that we want one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we don't have the inventory.
Yeah. Right.
How did you start this? Like, since this is your home, like.
Actually, it started up where Wolf Vineyards is now.
Yeah.
Andy McGregor, who owned that property at the time, said, well, why don't you come up on the other vineyard that I have? And I will lease you a piece of property. You can do what you want with it. And you can help me with the Chardonnay. So we decided that would be great. We would start a, we would try to get a an experimental vineyard. But we found out we couldn't do that. We had to be affiliated with a university, and at that time, the closest university with an enology department was Fresno.
Oh, wow.
So the man who was giving us all this information from, at that time, BATF, said, you know, you make good wine. Why don't you sell it? And he said, well, we really came up here to pretty much retire. And he said, well, I'll give you a variance. And you can make as little as you want. And you can get bonded so you can sell it. And then, okay, well, that sounds like it. Something interesting that we'd like to do. So we did. And then we got bonded in 1984 and started making Chardonnay for sale. We were also making the Benito Duzzi Zinfandel at the time, but that was only for our own use. And the use of all our friends. So we stayed with the Chardonnay for a long time, and then it got to the point where we decided, okay, well, we're going to sell a little Zinfandel too. So we started making a little more Zinfandel, and Benito was kind enough to allow my husband, they became very good friends, and he could allow my husband to go up, look at the vines, pick the side, pick where he wanted, and we kind of got a reputation for Benito Uduzzi, really good Zinfandel. And our Zinfandel is different than most of the Paso Robles Zinfandels in that it's light, and not light in alcohol, but it doesn't have that dark, jammy taste that most of the Zins up in the Paso Robles area do. And from there, we stayed, and we remained very small. We were making around 500 cases, and selling the Pinot Noir or the Chardonnay. Then we started in with Pinot Noir because the other vineyard that Andy had Pinot Noir at that time, and buying grapes from him and doing that. Then when that that vineyard sold, I believe in it was probably 1998, we decided that we, even though we had a lifetime lease on our little piece of property, we wanted to move out on our own. That was only supposed to be a temporary thing that lasted 18 years. And actually, our house is now Wolf's tasting room.
Oh, okay. How neat.
So we bought the property down here and put in Pinot Noir. And we didn't put in Chardonnay because if we wanted it, we probably could buy it anywhere in the valley. But we decided we were going to go all red because my husband's words were that wine is made to be red.
So I like it.
We decided that we would do Pinot Noir, and we put in Lagrein, which is the basis for our San Floriano, which is a blend. And in the front, we had one side was Pinot Noir, and the other side was Lagrein. And three rows down the center were Syrah. And then in the back, we planted the Pinot Noir. And we went along like this, as I say, for probably until 2012, when we started seeing something wrong with the front. Nobody knew what it was. From there, it turned out that it was the red leaf blight, which hit almost the entire valley. Fortunately, it didn't hit the back. But at any rate, in 13, we decided to pull it out and start fresh. So instead of planting the Syrah, we decided to put in just Lagrein on one side and Pomar, which is a Pinot Noir variety, in the front. From there, we just went on.
Very neat.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So your husband's background, he was a rocket scientist. So did either of you have a background in wine or winemaking, or did you just pick it up?
I love it.
My husband was from Italy.
Yeah.
And Italians drink wine as part of their meal.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're little children. we all have our little glass, which is 3/4 water and a couple of drops of wine, if you want it. And our children were never denied a taste.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. And actually, there's a kind of a funny story. When he was about 2 years old, his grandfather was making wine in the basement of their home, and he was very curious as to what was happening. a stool and poked over the barrel and fell in.
Oh, no.
And he said that was his introduction to wine. They pulled him out, and from then on, it became, like I say, a funny story and part of our tradition.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
Very cool.
Let me pour you some of the San Florian. This is a blend. And this is, oops, I did it again.
No worries. I liked the Pinot. It was
I liked the Pinot a lot.
Really easy drinking.
Yeah, it really was. What's the price point for your wines?
It's right here.
Oh, it's right there. Right in front of me.
Well, not right in front of you. It was right in front of me.
The San Floriano is a blend that changes yearly. This particular one is 58% Legraille and 42% Syrah. And we were making this as a blend because we did not feel, my husband did not feel, that the American public was ready yet for a straight Legraille.
I don't think I've ever had a straight Legraille.
We have. They make one in Paso at that winery where we bought a bunch of wine, and I got the Nebbiolo, the large format Nebbiolo.
Pelletier. Oh,
they have a Legraille.
And there's also
that's the only place I've ever seen it.
Well, I only know of three places. That place, I believe it's Avila Valley here, and us. We moved up here in March of 1983 and went from home winemaking to, we thought, an experimental winery, which turned out to be a very small winery. Probably, we probably still are the smallest in the state.
Wow.
And I don't know for sure, but we're still working. We still have that grandfather in to our little winery. So when we moved down here, we took the cuttings that we had moved from Thousand Oaks up to there, but Mayo said, no, now we're going to go full steam ahead. So we were using the Legraille that was grown in Creston until ours matured. And then this is when we started the San Floriano. And that's made, I should say that was made, because the last year of the San Floriano was 2013. Which was the last that we got from there. But fortunately, Mayo had the presence of mind for some reason, I don't know why, to plant the back acre in Legraille before he took some, they took cuttings from there and put them there, and fortunately, it worked out. So this particular San Floriano is made, it's not a field blend, it's blended right at the hopper. In other words, we pick all of the Legraille, we pick all of the Syrah, and then when we get to the hopper, it goes one load of Legraille, one load of Syrah.
Okay.
And it varies in percentage each year, depending on what we get. We were getting out of the field. That's the difference in the... But it very seldom changes because the Legraille is a very, very deep grape. And it has very individual characteristics. So anyway, in 2014, unfortunately, my husband was in the hospital, or he was in rehab at harvest time. He had broken his femur.
Ooh. Oh, man.
So it was a long recovery. And my grandson and I were pretty much in charge of what was going on. And so when they picked the first Legraille from the back, and it landed right there, and we looked at it, and it was beautiful. It was clean. It had berries the size of blueberries.
I have
pictures I can show you that are just beautiful. And we kind of looked at each other and said, shall we do it? And I kind of hemmed and hawed. I said, yeah.
You're like, my husband can't chase us down, so.
So we pressed it. And after it was pressed, we took a bottle, a small sample, to the rehab and handed it to Mayo and said, taste it, what do you think? And he kind of tasted it and he looked up and he said, you did it, didn't you? And I said, yeah. He says, you did good.
Oh, that's so cute. So is that your...
That's the LaGrine, yeah. So at any rate, it turned out to be fabulous. The only bad thing was we didn't have much.
Yeah.
Because we just had the half acre. And so we decided, okay, we were going to, this is all three of us, decided that we were going to put it into new French oak and let it sit for much longer than we normally do. And that one is not in there.
Okay. No, I was just going to see.
But at any rate, we treated it like a really, really premium wine. And it turned out well. We served it for the first time to our wine club. I believe it was in 2017, in May of 2017. And yes, it was just before Mayo died, as a matter of fact, yeah. And it just went like lightning. So we don't have too much left of that particular one. But since then, we have been making the straight LaGrine.
Okay. So you don't make the San Floriano blend anymore?
We have not made the San Floriano since 2013. That was our last.
So is your grandson your winemaker, or are you the winemaker
now? My husband was the winemaker. He taught my grandson. My grandson makes all the decisions as far as the wine's making is concerned. My portion is the books.
I love that so much. I'm a sucker for family stuff, and I love it. I think that's awesome.
Well, that's our
plus family. The wine's delicious, but I think the family just makes it that much better.
Yeah, and I love, you know, every wine has a story, but you don't always get to hear the story. So thank you for sharing that story with us.
You're very welcome. And this is the infamous Benito Guzzi Zinfandel. Infamous in that is up north, us, and home winemakers.
Okay.
Oh.
Benito has a love of home winemakers.
Yeah, that's good.
And as I told you before, it's light on the palate.
Yeah,
it is
very.
It's not light in alcohol. And I believe this one is 15.5. And, but it's easy to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. That's very good.
I've been told it tastes like violets, it tastes like strawberries, and it tastes like raspberries.
I think it tastes delicious.
My husband also had a saying, wine tastes like the berries. If it doesn't taste like the berries it's made from, it is not good. So.
Yeah, I like that.
Man, they've all been so good.
They're so good.
I love the Zin because it's easy drinking and it's delicious. But the San Floriano is so interesting, you know?
It is.
I think I like Syrah, and I was kind of expecting, I know that it was, the percentage was less on Syrah, but I think I was expecting a little bit more to like recognize Syrah in there. And the little grind is so interesting. It added a nice complexity to it. Yeah.
The LaGrine is actually a very palatable, easy blending wine for its color.
Mm-hmm.
When we would make the San Floriano or the LaGrine, I would wear white clothes. because if you got splashed, and of course you did, the white clothes were bleachable. If you had on a pink top, throw it away.
Yeah.
It's not going to come out. And there's, again, another funny story is we were pressing the LeGrine one time, and we were kind of hands-on. I mean, when you press. And we were going to a party that night, and my cuticles were dripping purple. Even though I had dumped them in bleach, they were still cuticles.
Wow.
So it happened to be a Halloween party. So I went to the dollar store and bought some purple nail polish.
Just go with it.
Come up, and it comes from the ocean. And it's very difficult to talk.
That makes sense.
You'd never guess it right now.
No,
it's so like, still it's perfect. Calm.
As a matter of fact, when I got up this morning, I thought, oh, it's going to be overcast today. It's not going to be a pretty day. And then it turned out it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, you can't beat it for January.
Right?
You don't like the Zinfandel?
I do, but not as much. Yeah, I did like the Zinfandel.
Zinfandel reminds me of, so when I went up for that blind tasting course after I did the level one test, the wine that I had to designate was a Zinfandel. It turned out to be a Zinfandel, and this really reminds me of that wine.
Your Pinot is exceptionally delightful.
Thank you.
I feel like sometimes Pinots for me are kind of hit and miss.
Pinot is, as far as I'm concerned, the most fickle wine that there is.
I was going to say, yeah. It's funny because in that podcast, they're like, it's such a fickle, fickle bastard. But
you really never know what you got.
Yeah.
But then when it comes out good, it's, you know, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, like when it's good, it's really good. And when it's not, it's just like, into it.
But we've been lucky. There have been times, for example, when you put the Pinot in the bottle, and it's good, and then you taste it, and the bottle shock, if you want to call it, is gone, and you think, oh no, this isn't very good, but you don't throw it away. You put it back, and 2 months later, taste it again, and it's the same wine.
Yeah.
It changes, mm-hmm. And the only time we have I shouldn't say the only time, but one of the few times that we have not had a change is when we used the Stelvin caps. Instead of, in 2010, we decided that we went from corkage, 1% to 10%, from corks that were not perfect, and we've always purchased the best that there is. 2010, Stelvin came out with their cork, and I guess it was 2011 because this was the 10 vintage, but we decided to try it, and it turned out that the wine restaurants did not want a screw top.
Oh, I love screw top. So the convenience factor.
If nothing else.
Right? It's the best.
The Pinot Noir came in second out of 77, including French wines.
Wow.
When this got around the area, we were probably the first ones to use the Stelvin corks, caps. Well, at any rate, when we got there, the restaurants heard of it. Wanted to buy it.
No.
I said, no.
Good for you.
It's going to my wine club.
Yeah, so, I feel like restaurants feel like they, for so long, like a screw top had a bad, like it meant it was cheap or bad wine. And then, like, restaurants don't have the flourish of opening it in front of
yes,
you.
Yes, that's the thing.
And it's like,
there's no, like, there's less pomp and circumstance to the presentation.
Right?
Right.
Which they do anyway. They'll probably call it glassage or something.
We have to clean our glass.
When I got married, the restaurant we had our reception at, they told us, like, we could either buy wine from them or we could pay a corkage fee, you know, which was totally reasonable, and they were really cool about it. But my husband's like, if we buy one of those giant bottles, is it only one corkage fee, or how does that work? And I was like, I don't think it works that way.
Per person.
So now, but now you use, are these all corks? Like now you're back to cork?
Because of the restaurants, yes. Yeah. And for the most part, our wines are found in the restaurants or right here. We don't have any in that I know of at the moment in, for example, stores, grocery stores or wine shops or anything like that. It's pretty much restaurants. And I'm trying to talk my grandson into the back to go back to the Stelvins because of the fact that they do not change in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hemming and hawing about it, so we'll see what happens.
But I actively look for decent wine that has a corkscrew because it's so convenient. Thank you, screw top. It's so convenient, like especially if my husband and I are out camping. Or we're going somewhere where it's inconvenient to have to, like, mess with a cork. Like, I think it's a great idea.
And also, the corks today are getting more and more scarce.
I'm sure. And probably more and more expensive.
Well, this went from, I believe it was 35 years ago, I believe it was 35 cents. It's now 75 cents. Wow. At least it was last year. I don't know what it is this year.
Yeah.
And they're nowhere near as good.
No, some of the corks are awful. Like, you open a bottle of wine, and I feel like I now, instead of a screw top, you judge them by the quality of corks.
Well, because, like, you know, these are nice and solid corks, but they have the ones where, like, they end cap them, and, like, the middle is all, like, the mix, and then
like, those kind of, like,
yeah, those kind of, like, fall apart.
And they also give the wine a plastic taste. Many people don't understand that. Now, a true connoisseur, yes. The first thing they do is they look at the cork. Oh, you use good corks. Oh, yeah, we do. But there are, of the good corks, there are still corks that are not good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing you can do about it. They come in quantity. There's nothing you can do about it, and you're not going to examine each cork as you're buying.
<Yeah. laughs> Nobody has time for that.
We're back again from our very glamorous mobile recording studio.
Woo-woo!
I feel like I should actually take a picture of this because I think this is great. We are recording and it's mobile and the sun is making me look very pale.
Whoa!
Here we go. Ah! Hey guys, we will let you see how glamorous this is in not even either of our ours.
Yes, we're not even in our own car.
Piedra nice. Creek Wine Vineyard.
Amazing. Not winery.
Yeah, very good. Please don't go there because
never go.
You will probably want to become a member just like we did. And if not, you will at least buy some of the wine and limit how much we're able to buy, which would be disappointing.
Yeah, plus, like, I'm sure you guys have caught on by now that, like, I love a family-run thing. Hence my love for Alta Colina.
Personally touches each grape, watches them grow, you know, like,
yeah,
that's
it's a labor of
special.
Love. It's yeah. not about, like, money.
Right.
Plus, how cute was she? Like,
she was adorable.
She was adorable. We get to this house, and both of us were like,
there
what?
Was some trepidation when we pulled up. It was like, this is awkward.
This is 100% like somebody's house. So she just, like, welcomes us in and walks us through her house to the back porch where we sit down and, like, do our tasting, and it's awesome.
She got waters out for us. She had some cheese. For us.
Which were really good. I only had one, and that's only because, like, I knew if I didn't stop right then, I wasn't gonna stop.
I was real tempted, but I'm technically not supposed to be eating, like, any refined carbohydrates right now, or grains, which Cheez-Its literally are.
Yeah.
So I didn't even start because I also knew I would have no.
And they were like, they weren't regular Cheez-Its, you guys.
No.
They were like a flavored, delicious Cheez-It.
They looked like the yummy kind.
I don't even know what kind, and it's probably for the best because I would totally go buy them.
But, you know, I will say that at first I thought, wow, this is going to be kind of weird because it's clearly at someone's house, and
I mean, I did say when we were walking, we were driving up. Like, the only other time I've had wine in someone's living room, it was an awesome experience. So, like, maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah. People stop opening up fancy-ass places for us to come taste your wine. We just want to come to your house.
Yeah.
And you
Where
tell us
the
story.
No people and no noise and just
It was great. It was completely personalized. She sat with us the whole time, other than when she went to get us our wine that we bought. And it was, yeah, every single wine had a story.
I feel like that we bought wine says something, too, because, like, we have actively pursued not buying wine at any of the places we stop. Like, we're trying to save money. We're, you know, we're not trying to get crazy, but we both bought wine because it was, like, so good.
Yeah. And because, I mean, I'm a real sucker for if you tell me something is not in production anymore.
Oh, I know.
And she was like, that's San Floriano, we don't make it. And I was like, sign me up, I want some now.
So I bought two.
Yeah.
And then, like, I really wanted, there was one wine that was, like, wine club only, and I really wanted it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even, I was like, I'll just wait for it to come in the shipment.
I know. That's what I had to go with, too, because otherwise I was like, okay, yeah, sorry that I'm not spending any money, but I just spent a bunch of money on wine. So I refrained. Self-control.
Yeah. And to be honest, you guys, I don't think that there is a tasting fee associated with going out there to taste. I don't see that in print anywhere.
No, but I think maybe we should start charging a tasting fee to tell people to go there. Like, this is going to be a hidden one. We're going to, like, beep out the name of it, and we're not going to give you directions unless you pay us for it.
Yeah, that was a great, great tasting experience.
Like, it was delightful. I feel like, safe to say, thus far on all of our stops doing this, hands down my favorite.
Yeah.
Great wine. She's adorable. Like, awesome setting. Loved the story.
Definitely another kind of, like, in the entree category, though, where it's, like, you're not going to go every time.
No.
It's off the beaten path.
Yes.
And you would not take groups there.
No, not at all. Like, I feel like 3-4 people max, and only, like, you don't want to go there with someone who's just looking to get wasted. Like, you only want to go there if you love wine and you're interested in the story and you want to, like, be a part of it.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. But no, like, I love that place. Like, there, like, that might be, it's not my favorite, but it might be up there.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
And the only reason it's not my favorite is because I feel immense loyalty to Alta Colina, which is my favorite.
Every single podcast, Alta Colina, you're going to have to start paying us
a
plug fee because we are plugging you every single podcast.
You send me an email and we'll talk about your advertisement.
Okay, you guys. Well, I think that wraps up our thoughts and experiences at Piedra Creek.
Yes.
I'm sorry, we didn't get super into the wine, but the wine is very good. The Pinot.
The wine is delicious.
The Pinot was very good. The San Floriano blend is very good. Beware, though, they don't make it anymore, at least currently. So, Lagrine and Syrah. I mean, yeah, I've only had Lagrine at one other place. I didn't even really know how to properly say it until today.
I really want to go back there and have it again now that, like, I have something to relate it to because that's, like, a whole new thing for me.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Notes of, like, licorice on the finish for me there. The Zinfandel was also good.
Here's the thing. Like, just trust us. The wine's really good. Story's great. The lady's adorable. Like, just trust us already.
Yeah.
You don't have to hear all the details about the wine. Just that it was all good.
Yeah, it really is kind of the place that you should go for yourself. Yeah. You really should go for yourself and see. We think that you'll enjoy it just as much as we did, which is why we don't want to tell you all about it.
Like, this is a sacrifice for me, recommending you go there.
All right, you guys, well, that wraps it up, I think, for real this time. We hope that you have a great weekend. If you are out wine tasting, taste at all the best places, go where we've recommended, or tell us about a new place. If you find somewhere great this weekend and you want us to go give them the run through, let us know.
Please do.
So visit us on the interwebs, centralcoastuncorked.com.
centralcoastuncorked.com. You can also find us on social media, Facebook, Central Coast Uncorked, and Instagram, Central Coast Uncorked. We want to hear from you. We share pictures of ourselves in our fabulous mobile podcasting booth. I don't know what to call this. Vessel. You want to hang out with us, so follow us there and we'll virtually hang out. We will see you guys later.
Bye.